Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania. I'm Helen Shield. Add to the list of things the internet has not killed, ham radio, amateur radio. It's not only still got a following here, but it's got young adoptees. There's a guy in his early 30s who's not only into ham radio, he has a YouTube channel about it with more than 50,000 followers. Hayden Honeywood is the Ham Radio DX host. Hello, Hayden.
Hello, Helen. How are you?
I'm well. Do you feel like generationally it should be me explaining to you what ham radio is?
Probably. I'm glad that you said young. It's 20 years this year that I've been an amateur radio operator.
Yeah, welcome to the ABC, mate. You're in your 30s.
Yeah.
That's the greatest part of this place.
Yeah.
What is ham radio?
Well, it's funny, actually, you mentioned about the internet. It's funny how ham radio sort of adapted over time, and the internet's actually one of the things that has helped ham radio over time too. So what ham radio is ham radio, amateur radio, is an experimental self-training emergency communications, like radio service. And it has about 15,000 amateurs in Australia and, you know, many more worldwide as well.
Do you feel like you're part of a secret club of 15,000 people?
It's definitely a community vibe. There is a tight-knit community. Everyone shares similar interests. We're all interested in experimentation and just how stuff works, basically. It's, you know, very, very, all the science behind it and how everything works. So,
right.
Yeah.
Who got you into it?
So I was about 12 or 13 when I got licensed. So you need a license to operate on amateur radio. And it was actually my two uncles. So they were both amateur radio operators. They were interested in electronics and computers and all that sort of stuff, which I was as a kid as well. And then they introduced it to me. I was sitting at my uncle's house in Launceston one day. We went to visit, and he had a radio sitting on his desk. And I said to him, you know, what's that? And he put the headphones on my head. And next thing you know, I could hear like British accents. And I'm like, what's going on here? And he says, oh, yeah, they're in the UK and this is amateur radio. And that's kind of how it sort of begun. So
somebody who was a 12-year-old kid in the 60s might be going, well, yeah, we were into it. For a 12-year-old kid 20 years ago, how did you try and explain that to your mates at school?
That was difficult. They didn't really understand it, to be quite honest, because it was just about, that was about the time when we had mobile phones were starting to become pretty, you know, pretty lightweight and not quite smartphones, but it was pretty easy to communicate at that time. So, it was interesting. They sort of didn't really understand it. But we've found recently that there's been a bit of a resurgence, especially upon younger people as well. They're starting to get more interested, especially with like STEM and those sort of programs in schools and stuff. They're getting more involved and learning more about it. And it's really helped them.
What do you remember of the first time you bounced a signal off the moon?
Oh, okay. Yes. That's just one of the many, many things that you can do with amateur radio. I've been saying it's a hobby within 1,000 hobbies, because there's so much stuff you can do. And one of the things is moon bounce. We've got a member of our radio club here in Hobart. He's got a dish set up and he sends signals, sort of like text message type signals, and then they get sent and bounced off the moon, which is, you know, a long way away, and then received on the other side of the world. So that's probably one of the biggest achievements that you can do, it's quite amazing when you get, you know, confirmation that the other station's actually received your signal and you can have a bit of a conversation. So, yeah.
What have you talked about via the moon?
Well, it all depends too on like how big a dish and how much power you've got, but you can actually talk with voice or Morse code even as well. So Morse code is also a way to communicate via the moon. But yeah, it's quite interesting. It's like it takes 2.5 seconds or so for the signal to go up and back. So sometimes you can even hear your own echoes as well. So you can hear yourself coming back. So
do you feel like it's got to be a worthy conversation if it's going via the moon? What do you talk about?
it's funny. Listening to it is actually a bit of a hollow feeling because it's, you know, what the moon's like. It's kind of a bit of a desolate place. But yeah, it's one of those achievements that everyone gets really excited about when it actually happens. So
do you need to be into climbing mountains to be into ham radio?
some people do. They're the ones that are probably a little bit crazier. I've done that before myself. So, there's a program where people will get sort of like a ham radio kit together. So they'll get a radio to transmit on, an antenna they might build. They'll get some, you know, other bits and pieces, lightweight, of course, because you've got to be trekking up a mountain. And then they go and they operate from the top of these summits. We've got lots in Tasmania. And what they do is make contacts with as many people as they can, and they get points for that, and they can achieve awards, and it's a whole program. So that's a big program around the world. So lots of people.
Dear everyone, I'm up Federation Peak. Can you hear me?
Well, actually, funny enough, we do utilize the internet to let people know that you're actually there. So that's can even be out in the middle of nowhere. If you've got no mobile phone reception, you can use your radio to say, look, I'm up Federation Peak. Could someone please make contact with me? So, yeah, that's something that definitely everyone does. So.
Which mountain have you broadcast from the top of?
Well, the obvious one's Mount Wellington. We've been there and several others in the Wellington range. Collins Cap out the back there, and Trestle Mountain, and Collins Bonnet, and just keeps on going. So, yeah, I actually went to Maria Island about 3 months ago, and I climbed Mount Moriah, so that was a bit of a good hike. And it's good to get out in nature too, and sort of combine two interests. I love being outside, and it's quite nice.
How much gear did you haul up Mount Moriah?
Not a lot. I had a little portable, small antenna, so I was just able to set up and contacted a few people around Hobart who knew I was going up there. So got the points for that, and on the way towards the next award, I suppose. So, yeah.
Right. When you say points, who is allocating points and giving awards?
Yeah, so there's a central database or a central website which records all of the data. So you go in there, and what you do is you make a contact with someone. So that's actually communicating with them and exchanging some details. So we exchange a signal report and just let them know where we are. And then you enter that data in, which is what we call a log. So you enter that into the website, and it calculates it all for you. And there's leaderboards and everything. So you can compete against your mates. You can compete against people that you know across the other side of the world if you really want to.
What have you won before?
Not that many. I need to climb some more mountains. So.
Do you get a prize? Do you get a certificate?
Certificates, yep. So you get there's a couple of certificates. One's called the Mountain Goat. So that's when you climb so many peaks or get so many points. And then there's also what they call the shack sloth, and that's for those that can't quite climb the mountains, but they communicate with the people that are up on top of the mountaintops, so they get points for that as well.
This is Hayden Honeywood, the Ham Radio DX host, on evenings on ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania. So you bounce a signal off the moon. What's some of the other science you work into what you do?
Well, you mentioned earlier about youth. One of the big things that does happen is talking to astronauts on the International Space Station. So the International Space Station has an amateur radio on board, and many of the astronauts actually get their amateur radio license as part of their training through NASA. And schools can book out time. There's quite a long waiting list, but they can book out time to talk to astronauts. And just recently in the UK, there was a school that did that, and they had about a 15-minute window where the International Space Station was passing over, and all the students lined up in the auditorium and asked astronauts all sorts of questions over the radio. So it was quite unique.
I feel like a school on the west coast of Tasmania did this. Am I making this up? I feel like we've had a conversation about that
before.
I think it
has. Not sure, South Hobart Primary may have as well, many years ago, but definitely on the West Coast, I'm pretty sure there was as well, yeah.
The moon, the International Space Station. And are there weather conditions which affect what you do?
Yes, weather conditions, the sun, that's all plays part of it. As far as weather's concerned, so my personal interest is in higher frequencies, so microwave, not sort of that. I am interested in the HF, but my main interest is those higher ones, and they're more affected by local weather conditions. So particularly in summer when we get really high, we get high pressure systems and good stable weather, things can develop which we call tropospheric ducting. So there's different layers in the atmosphere, and tropospheric, in the troposphere there's cooling that can happen with the heating from the sun, and that can cause like a duct, a bit like a a bit like an air conditioning duct. If you yell down an air conditioning duct, you can hear yourself down the other side, or someone can hear you down the other side. Your voice gets trapped in there. The same with a radio signal. It gets trapped in that duct. And we actually, a couple of years ago, went to just outside of Orford. We went to the top of Three Thumbs Lookout, I think it was. And myself and a friend, we saw that it was going to be good conditions, and we used 2.4 gigahertz, which is the same frequency as your normal Wi-Fi router at home, and that hardly even reaches across, you know, the house. We had a little bit more power, but we were able to send a signal from there and talk to a guy in New Zealand across the Tasman Sea, and that actually set a Australian-New Zealand record for distance on that frequency. So it was pretty good, pretty fun. And we build all the equipment and we put all the equipment together. That's sort of half the, you know, the enjoyment. And then the other half is actually seeing it work and doing those kind of accomplishments. So, yeah, it was good.
The French family band, a Tasmanian band, they have a song about, I think it's Grandad was in the northwest of the state, and there was, he thought it might have been because of nuclear testing in the desert in the US. He picked up the Grand Ole Opry. He picked up a radio signal from Tennessee. Just briefly, and it started this whole thing for their family, which they've ended up singing about. But could you imagine that something like nuclear testing would create moments where a signal would travel that far?
I don't know about nuclear testing. Definitely the sun. So the sun's one big nuclear ball, I suppose. And at the moment, we're at the top of the solar cycle. So we've been getting a lot of solar flares lately that have been knocking out communications and all that sort of stuff. But it kind of also helps radio as well. So at the moment, it's like never been a better time to be an amateur radio operator, because we're communicating around the world when the top of the cycle, the sun's active. And actual fact, you're talking about long distance communication. That's a term which we call DX, and that's kind of where my YouTube channel comes from, DX. Someone, I do remember a story of, I think it was a guy in the United States hearing 936 here in Hobart, and it was like a big thing. And it was amazing because, you know, you normally don't hear it that far away. Yeah. So, yeah.
But AM is incredible.
Yeah, especially at nighttime as well.
Well, what do your followers get from you on your YouTube channel? What do you post on there?
I post a lot of things like tutorials, DIY stuff, you know, sort of what I'm working on at the moment. Sometimes we'll do a lot of club-related videos, what we're doing in our radio club here. Also do a lot of reviews, equipment reviews, for those who are beginning, like what to buy, where do I start, that sort of thing. So yeah, I kind of do that on my channel. It's sort of grown, quite quickly, very surprisingly, but, yeah, I just trying to help others explore and just find out about amateur radio, because, I know a lot of probably thought it might be like their grandfather's hobby, or like their grandfather might've done it, or their father may have done it as well, but it's definitely, yeah, alive and well in 2024, and YouTube's a great way to spread that to people.
Have you had a very cross-generational friendship circle ever since you were a kid because of it?
Yeah, it's probably a good way of putting it. I've gotten along with probably my peers have been probably slightly older than me most of the time, and got to know quite a few people. It's interesting, I went to the United States last year and I met some more amateur radio operators over there, and they were sort of around about my age as well. So it was good to see some slightly younger people getting involved in it too.
Your YouTube following, you know, it could fit in Bellerive Oval twice over. You could fill that stadium twice over with the number of followers you have on there. Who's a typical one of them?
I'd like to say half the MCG, but...
all right, let's go with that.
sorry, what was that?
Who do you have a typical person who follows you online?
Yeah, it's probably an established amateur radio operator that's been involved in it for quite a while, and someone who probably wants to learn something new. So I mentioned that amateur radio is like a hobby of 1,000 hobbies. So there's always something to do. You might not have discovered, like I haven't even, like how long have we got? Like it could take all night to go through everything that we've got, but like we can transmit television as well. We've got our own TV studio up on the top of the Queen's Domain at our radio club. We've got all sorts, and that's the kind of thing that not everyone does in amateur radio, but then they discover it and they might try it. So, yeah, I think they come to my channel to to discover that sort of stuff and to try something new and just to inspire and promote it a little bit.
Someone's texted, if you don't mind. This is from T in Blackmans Bay, saying, have you noticed that in disaster movies and post-apocalyptic movies, there's always someone with a shortwave radio? Will ham radio operators save us in the zombie apocalypse or in a catastrophic climatic event?
I'd like to hope so. I'd like to think so.
No pressure, but it's you, Hayden.
Well, it's interesting. We actually have an emergency division of amateur radio. So here in Australia, it's called WISEN, the Wireless Institute Civil Emergency Network. So what they do is they provide backup communications when the grid goes down or we get natural disasters or some other emergency happens. And the mobile phone network might not work. The first responder networks might be struggling, or they might not be able to pass so many messages, or they might just need operators who actually know how to operate a radio, extra manpower. So that's operational as well. So it's definitely, in emergency situations, it's definitely a plus and a bonus to have amateur radio around.
Do you think it's shaped what you've done for a career as well?
Yes, definitely. I think it started, my interest is still technology. I'm in a IT background at the moment, so I'm always wanting to play with new things and learn new things and how they work. So it definitely, getting in at that age, definitely gave me an idea of where I want to go with my career and it definitely forged me on the right path with that.
What does your shed look like?
I don't really have a shed. I've got a garage and it is full of radio gear. My partner probably is smiling right now because she's very understanding. There's a lot of antennas in the backyard as well.
And all the lock drawers they had to have for the alarm clock.
Well, it was funny because when I used to operate from home with my parents, I do remember one night operating on the radio and getting told off because the touch lamp was pulsing on and off while they were trying to sleep. So I did have to discontinue operation. I've got a little what we call a shack. So all of our ham radio gear set up, we call that a shack. And I've got one of those and a little workbench and do all sorts of projects on it. So
a whole lot of parts.
Yes, a lot of spare parts, a lot of radios. Probably too many, but you can never have too many radios, I suppose.
I can only support that theory. Hayden Honeywood is the host of Ham Radio DX, which you can find on YouTube. Or, if you know the way, can people find you on air?
If you kind of know where to listen, we do have an amateur radio repeater that's located up on Mount Wellington. That's on 146.700 megahertz, 146.7 megahertz. So I'm usually on there when I'm driving around or if I'm in the shack at home. A lot of people start off with a thing called a software-defined radio, which is a little computer in a box, and you can just use that as a receiver to just have a bit of a listen around. So, they might hear me there. I've also got, as you said, on YouTube, I've got a playlist of all of the Tassie videos. So, what we do in our club, what I do around the state. So, check those out.
Catch up on the ham radio adventures. This is Evenings on ABC Radio Hobart.